I'm looking at the stack of papers you've brought in today, and I have to be honest. At first glance, this just looks like someone's very dense family genealogy project. We've got memoirs, typed conversion stories, photos of, Finnish grandmothers. It doesn't exactly scream high-stakes thriller.
It definitely looks domestic on the surface, yeah. But you know how we sometimes talk about the butterfly effect in history? Like
Yeah.
an archduke takes a wrong turn, gets shot, and suddenly the whole world is at war.
Sure, the idea that small events can trigger these massive consequences, but we usually apply that to wars or, I don't know, economic crashes.
Right. But we rarely apply it to spiritual history or family history.
Huh.
And the mission for this deep dive is to look at these documents, specifically the stories of three sisters, Tarja, Ermeli, and Lena Honkonen, and trace how a single unfulfilled promise from the 1930s managed to completely rewrite the spiritual DNA of a family 40 years later.
Okay, I'm intrigued. A broken promise from the 30s.
A broken promise, a war, and a debt that took a generation to repay. And it ends with this really radical theological shift from devout post-war Lutheranism to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Which, just for context, was not exactly the trendy thing to do in 1970s Finland.
Definitely not. I mean, it was completely countercultural. But to understand why these sisters made that jump, we have to look at the soil they grew up in. Because the source material here makes one thing very clear. These weren't people looking for religion. They already had it.
Yeah, looking at the notes on the parents, Pentti and Kerttu, this was not a Christmas and Easter kind of household.
Not even close. The mother, Kerttu, she was a Karelian refugee who fled the war. The father, Pentti, was a farmer, but he's also a lay preacher. The sources say he used to deliver Bibles across the border into Russia.
Wow.
They supported mission work in Africa. The house was constantly filled with hymns.
So faith was the operating system of the house.
Exactly. They'd actually dedicated their children to God before they were even born. So the Honkonen sisters, Tarja, Ermeli, and Lena, they grew up in this very protective, very devout bubble in the Finnish countryside.
So where does the butterfly effect come in? What was the promise that started this whole chain reaction?
You have to go back to the father's brother, Marty. Back in the 30s, the sister's great uncle, who had a bit more money, he made a promise. He promised to pay for Marty to go to teacher training.
Which would have been a huge deal for a farming family. That's a ticket to the middle class.
It changed everything. But then the Winter War begins. Marty is drafted and he's killed in action.
So the promise dies with him.
Theoretically, yes. The money was never sent, the training never happened. It was just another tragic loose end caused by the war, a dead end.
But clearly someone remembered it.
Decades later, the wealthy uncle's daughter, so the Honkonen sister's cousin, she remembers this. She remembers that her father had promised to educate a Honkonen. And she feels this weight, this sort of spiritual debt.
That's fascinating psychology. She feels she owes the family something because of promise her father made to a dead man.
It's a powerful motivator.
Mm.
So in the late 60s, she reaches out to the family. She says, essentially, I can't bring Marty back, but send one of your daughters to Helsinki. I'll hire her as a nanny, and she can attend evening school. I want to fulfill the promise.
And Ermeli is the one who steps up.
Ermeli takes the offer.
Yeah.
And this is the first domino. Because if Ermeli stays on the farm, in the village, she stays within her father's sphere of influence. By moving to Helsinki, she steps out of the bubble.
The big city.
The big city. And the sources show this wasn't just a change of address. It was an exposure to new ways of being spiritual. She meets a friend who drags her along on trips to Lapland and Norway.
Are these just vacations, like girls' trips?
Not really. They were spiritual retreats, morning and evening devotionals, intense Bible study. Ermeli starts reading the Bible for herself, not just listening to her father explain it. And this is where we see the family's musical heritage start to mutate into something very personal for her.
The songwriting. I was reading the lyrics she wrote. Her first song was called Guide My Life.
And look at the lyrics. Lead my steps back to you.
Which is an interesting choice of words for someone who grew up in the church. Lead me back. It implies she felt distant or lost.
Or that the inherited faith of her parents wasn't quite hers yet. She was searching. She wrote another song called Best Friend, which is surprisingly socially conscious. It talks about seeing injustice in the world and relying on God's power to fix it. She was cultivating a very active, seeking kind of faith.
And it seems like she became a magnet because the way her sisters join her in Helsinki. Honestly, if this were a movie script, I'd say it was too convenient.
It does feel scripted. Take Lena. Ermeli is at a prayer meeting at a Bible institute. The leader tells everyone to pick one specific person to pray for. Romelli chooses Lena.
And the next day.
The very next day, Lena knocks on her door in Helsinki. She hadn't been called. She just showed up.
Why? What was going on?
She was heartbroken. The notes say she was dealing with a failed relationship and deep disappointment. She just needed to escape. So she arrives in the city, totally vulnerable, right when Ermelie is primed to help her.
So Ermelie is there, spiritually charged up, and Lena just walks in looking for answers.
They sit down and read a pamphlet together. Something simple like how to ask Jesus to come into your lives.
Mm-hmm.
And Lena, in her desperation, she prays. She asks God to reveal himself. And she describes it as a light turning on. It wasn't intellectual, it was experiential.
And then the third sister, Tarja, follows a similar pattern.
Tarja's situation was actually a bit darker. The memoir mentions she was suffering from cruelty and financial deception.
Like identity theft.
Basically, yes. Someone had used her personal information to run up debts. She was being harassed, she was broke, and she was scared. She comes to Helsinki needing a lifeline.
And her sisters are there waiting.
They share a song with her, the beach song. The lyrics are about hearing angels whisper. It cut right through her trauma. And I love that the archives include this practical detail. She didn't just pray about the debt. Her employer happened to be a judge.
A handy connection.
Very. He helped her sue the person who scammed her, so she got spiritual peace and legal justice.
So now you have the trio, Ermelie, Lena, Tarja, plus their cousin Helene. They're all in Helsinki, they're all young, and they are on fire for God. And they decide to take it to the streets.
Literally, imagine the scene. It's the early 70s. You have three Finnish women wearing t-shirts that say Jesus is Lord, standing on street corners near the Linnanmäki amusement park.
The street singers.
That's what they became. They were singing songs by a band called Pro Fade. And these weren't polite Sunday hymns. The lyrics were about Jesus descending to the lowest depths to help those in sorrow. They were witnessing to the drunks, the teenagers, the people on the margins.
There's that story about the police trying to shut them down.
Yeah, a crowd had gathered, probably blocking the sidewalk. The police arrived to break it up. But the men in the crowd, the rougher characters, they actually step in. They tell the cops, don't take the girls away. They sing to us about Jesus.
That's powerful. It shows they were connecting with people who probably wouldn't step foot inside a cathedral.
It validated what they were doing. They were having an impact.
But this is the part I struggle with. They have a ministry. They have crowds. They have this intense shared faith. So why were they looking for something else? The sources mention a void.
That is the paradox. They were active, they were serving, but they felt they were hitting a ceiling. Lena actually prays a very specific prayer during this time. She prays, if there's a place where I can draw closer to you, please show it to me.
That's a dangerous prayer to pray. You usually get an answer you don't expect.
And the answer came walking down the street in July 1973. Ermelie bumps into two young women, Lisa Hämäläinen and Arja Miettinen. They were missionaries for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now hold on. These sisters were deeply Lutheran. Their dad was a Lutheran preacher. The missionaries are coming in with a very different theology. Usually when people switch religions, it's because they reject their old one. But these girls loved their background. How did the missionaries even bridge that gap?
This is where we need to get into the theology a little bit, because it's key to understanding the why. The missionaries didn't come in saying, your dad is wrong or Luther was bad.
That would have been a deal breaker.
Right. Instead, they introduced the concept of the apostasy and the restoration.
Okay. Break that down for us.
Sure. So the Lutheran position, generally speaking, is that the Catholic Church lost its way and Martin Luther reformed it. He fixed the broken windows and cleaned the house.
Okay, a renovation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the LDS missionaries presented a different narrative. They taught that after the death of the original apostles, the priesthood authority, the direct line to God, was lost completely. Not just damaged, but gone. A great apostasy.
So you can't just renovate the house.
You have to rebuild it from the foundation up. They taught that Joseph Smith didn't reform the church. He restored the original one. For the Honkonen sisters, this clicked. It validated Luther as a necessary step, a preparation, but it explained why they still felt a void. They were living in the renovated house, but they were looking for the original foundation.
That's a really nuanced way to look at it. It allowed them to keep their respect for their parents while moving past them.
Precisely. It wasn't a rejection, it was a graduation.
But still, the Book of Mormon, that's a big hurdle. It's a book about ancient America, totally foreign to Finnish culture.
And yet for Tarja, it was the thing that sealed the deal.
Yeah.
and it connects right back to her childhood.
The story about the stone.
Yes. So the missionaries explain the origin story of the Book of Mormon, how Joseph Smith found gold plates hidden under a stone in a hill.
Which sounds like a fairy tale to most people.
But Tarja freezes. She has a flashback to being a little girl in the forest. She remembers walking along a path and having this overwhelming, irrational intuition that something precious was hidden under a specific boulder. She actually spent time prying up rocks, looking for treasure.
Did she find anything?
The memoir says ants and earthworms.
The classic treasure hunter's reward.
But the feeling of the search stayed with her, that sense that truth is hidden in the earth. So when she hears plates under a stone, it didn't sound weird to her. It felt like a memory. It validated that childhood intuition.
It's amazing how personal those hooks were. The sources also mention some sensory experiences that seem almost too dramatic. We're talking about literal light in the room.
Both Ermeli and Lena describe this, and they are very specific about it. Ermeli was praying in a meeting, and she says sunlight burst into the room so brightly that someone actually stood up to close the curtains.
But wait, were the curtains already closed?
That's the implication. And Lena, remember, she was the skeptic of the group initially. She was in a meeting on a cloudy, rainy day. She internally challenged God. She asked for a sign. Suddenly, boom, bright light fills the room.
And that was it for her.
She concluded that only God could move the clouds that fast. It was the scientific proof she needed.
So the dominoes have fallen. Ermeli is baptized in August 1973. Mm-hmm. Lena and Tarja, a week later, their cousin Helena follows them. They've found their answer. But we have to talk about the cost. Because this isn't just a story about four girls. It's about their father.
This is the emotional weight of the story. Pentti Honkonen. He has dedicated his life to the Lutheran mission. He's a lay preacher. Now his daughters, his pride and joy, are joining this American church that he doesn't understand.
Ermeli tries to explain it to him, doesn't she?
She takes him to her new church. He sits through the service. Afterward, he admits the people are sincere. But later, he writes a letter to his daughters, and it is devastatingly blunt.
What did he say?
He said he felt a strange spirit, and his final instruction was three words.
Burn the books.
Burn the books.
Wow. That's visceral. He really thought they were in danger.
He thought he was protecting them from heresy. The sisters describe weeping together. They respected him so much. His spiritual approval meant everything to them. This forced a massive crisis. Do we follow our father who we love, or do we follow this new conviction?
It's the ultimate test of that butterfly effect. Okay. The chain reaction has now hit a wall. How did they resolve it?
They did what they had learned to do. They prayed. They used the method Joseph Smith used. And Tarja records receiving a very specific phrase in her mind. You are chosen. Keep the doctrines.
So they chose the doctrine over their father's approval.
They did. But, and I think this is the most beautiful part of the story, they didn't let it destroy the relationship. They didn't storm out or cut ties.
How did they manage that?
Well, look at that first Christmas after the conversion. They went home to the farm. Their father asked them to do the traditional alms collection for the Lutheran church.
That feels like a test. Are you still one of us?
Maybe. But they did it. They went door to door, collecting for the Lutheran parish. They sang the carols. They showed him, we are still your daughters. We are still Christians. We honor you.
And did it work? Did he soften?
Slowly. Over time, he watched their lives. He saw the fruits, as the scripture says. He saw that they became more devoted, not less. And later in his life, there's a quote where he tells his friends, yes, they too can be saved as long as they sincerely believe in Jesus Christ.
From burn the books to they can be saved, that's a huge journey for a man of his generation.
It is. And the sisters were with him at the end, singing him into the next life. They bridged the gap.
So the sisters convert, they navigate this family tension, and then they get to work. They didn't just sit in the pews.
Absolutely not. All four of them, the three sisters and cousin Helena, served full-time missions in Finland in the mid-70s. They became the missionaries they had met on the street.
There are some great little human moments from this time in the notes. I loved the story about the waffles. It seems so trivial, but the memoir highlights it as a major moment.
It's the story of Sister Wade, the mission president's wife. The sisters are at the mission home, and they see her making waffles, holding a baby, talking to another kid trying to climb on her lap. It was just chaotic domesticity.
Why did that stick with them?
You have to remember their background. In their experience, religious leadership was solemn. It was usually male, and it was somewhat distant. Here's a woman who was leading, nurturing, and making waffles all at once. It gave them a new template for what faithful womanhood could look like. It made the faith feel livable.
And then on the flip side of domestic waffle making, they're escorting the president of the church.
That was 1976. President Spencer W. Kimball visits Finland. The sisters dress in national folk costumes and escort him through the fair center. It's a moment of high visibility. They've gone from farm girls to the literal face of the church in Finland.
And Ermeli's path took an interesting turn later, too. She didn't just stay in Finland.
No. She felt called to something very specific. While reading the Book of Mormon, she felt a pull toward the Lamanites, which is the scriptural term used for the indigenous peoples of the Americas.
Okay, that's a very specific pull for a Finnish woman.
It is. But she followed it. She actually ended up serving a mission in Winnipeg, Canada, specifically working with indigenous communities there. She followed the thread all the way across the ocean.
The sources mention a snowball effect. Did they ever quantify how many people join because of this chain reaction?
Ermeli did the math at one point.
Hmm.
She estimated that through her lineage and the people they taught, over 100 people have joined the church. It started with one girl taking a nanny job because of a broken promise, and it turned into a community of over 100 souls.
There's one story about a golden investigator that I think illustrates the sister's tenacity perfectly. The woman whose husband said no.
Oh, right. She wanted to be baptized. But in that era, the husband refused consent.
Most people would have said, well, we tried.
Ermeli got angry. Not shouty angry, but holy anger. She actually challenged God. She said, if she isn't allowed to be baptized, how can I have the blessings I was promised? You have to fix this.
She put it on the line.
She and her companion fasted, and the husband's mind changed. The whole family eventually joined. It shows that combination of grit and grace they had. They were fighters.
So when we step back and look at this deep dive, we really have to go back to that butterfly effect.
It's the only way to view this story. An uncle makes a promise to educate his brother. The brother dies in a war. The promise hangs in the air for 30 years. A cousin remembers it, hires Ermeli. Ermeli goes to the city.
She meets the friend who takes her to Lapland. She starts writing songs. She prays for Lena.
Lena arrives. Tarja arrives. They sing on the street. They feel the void. They meet the missionaries.
And 100 lives are changed. It's incredible to think that if Marty hadn't died in the war, which is a tragedy, none of this would have happened.
Or if the cousin had just forgotten the promise. It reminds us that our family histories are full of these sliding doors moments. The dead end of the uncle's broken promise was actually a detour sign pointing towards something much bigger.
That's the thought I want to leave you with today. We all have those unfulfilled promises in our family lines. Maybe it's a career that didn't happen, a move that was canceled, a relationship that ended.
It's easy to look at those as failures.
Exactly. But look at the Honkonen story. Those loose ends might actually be the beginning of a story that you just haven't finished reading yet.
It definitely changes how you look at your own bad luck.
Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Goodbye, everyone.